Good morning. Good to be with you again, and I pray that what we do this morning will be beneficial for your life in Jesus Christ, your desire to live a life for Him in this world, and I pray that what we do will be servant to that purpose. So, as was mentioned, we are looking at the book of Ezekiel. And we're looking at the first chapter this morning. Now, I meant to talk to the person at the PowerPoint this morning. So just to let you know, we're going to park on that slide for the first hour of the message. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, the first 20 minutes. Okay. So we're going to park on that slide for the first, so you can just leave it up there, and then I'll let you know when we need to go on. So the title of the message is Ezekiel Saw the Wheel, and I actually considered doing a kind of a video because I found out after I chose that title that song or that phrase was put to the title of a song by Woody Guthrie. And one of my country music heroes, Johnny Cash, sang that song. And I said, you know, we could do a video of that. And then I listened to the song and I realized we shouldn't because the song has almost nothing to do with what Ezekiel is doing in that first chapter. So that's the story. So if you have a Bible in front with you or can grab one, then I would encourage you to do so. And what we're going to do for the first part of the message is just go through this first chapter. I'll be reading the entire chapter, stopping along the way to make some comments. And there's one thing in particular I want you to pay attention to as we go through the reading. What I want you to pay attention to is notice the number of times in the passage it uses the word like, looked like, appearance of, form of, etc. So I will emphasize those things as we go through the passage. In fact, you know what? I think, I hadn't planned to do this, but I think we should just read through the passage one time, and then I'll go back through and make a few comments about it. So Ezekiel chapter 1. If you have a Bible, that's wonderful. If you don't, you can just listen, like the early church had to when they went to church in the first couple of centuries. No PowerPoint, no overheads. They didn't even have Bibles. They just listened to the word. So it's your call. All right. In my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kabar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth of the month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kabar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was upon him. Now, before we get into what Ezekiel reports about what he saw, starting in verse 4, just a real quick history lesson here. If you know anything about the history of Israel and Judah, at this point in history, Judah is facing a crisis. And they face this crisis on account of their many sins and their rebellion against God and their worship of false gods. That's what's causing the crisis. And what's about to happen here is that the entire nation of Judah is about to be overrun by Babylon. God is going to use Babylon to destroy them. Leading up to that moment, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon on two different occasions took a few people from Judah and exiled them to Babylon. Now they left a whole bunch of people behind, but they carried about oh, I don't know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people into captivity. Ezekiel was one of them. And Ezekiel becomes the very first prophet who gives his prophecy in a foreign country. That's his whole ministry. He is living among the exiles in Babylon, and he's preaching to them or giving them the prophecies that God gives him, one of which is this vision in the first chapter. And that prophecy, that vision, part of that message is God is going to use Babylon to destroy the people we left behind in Judah. Not what they wanted to hear. They wanted to hear, in fact, other prophets had told them, this is not going to last very long at all. Just a couple of years, and then you're going to go back to Judah and pick up life where you left it. Ezekiel says to the exiles, we're not here for 2 years. We're not here for 3 or 4 years. We're here for 70 years. And in the next few years, God is going to use Babylon to destroy Judah. You will go back. But Ezekiel, what he really means is your sons and daughters will go back 70 years from now. You're here forever in terms of your lifetime. That's basically what the message is really all about. So that's the setting here as Ezekiel gets this message. Now, this is probably, in this chapter, we probably have his initial call experience. We probably have God calling Ezekiel to be a prophet. And he calls him to be a prophet through what happens in this bizarre chapter. Okay, so that's the setting. Now, we pick up at verse 4. Here's what Ezekiel says. And again, pay attention to all those looks and likes I talked about. I looked, and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like 4 living creatures. In appearance, their form was human, but each of them had 4 faces and 4 wings. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like those of a calf and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings on their 4 sides, they had human hands. All 4 of them had faces and wings, and the wings of one touched the wings of another. Each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. Their faces looked like this. Each of the 4 had the face of a human being, and on the right side, each had the face of a lion, and on the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. Such were their faces. They each had 2 wings spreading out upward, each wing touching that of the creature on either side. And each had 2 other wings covering its body. Each one went straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire, or like torches. Fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It was bright, and lightning flashed out of it. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. As I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its 4 faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like topaz, and all 4 looked alike. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the 4 directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not change direction as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all 4 rims were full of eyes all around. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. And when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go. And the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved. When the creatures stood still, they also stood still. When the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked something like a vault, sparkling like crystal and awesome. Under the vault, their wings were stretched out, one toward the other, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. Then there came a voice from above the vault over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. Above the vault over their heads was what looked like a throne of lapis lazuli. And high above on the throne was a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire, and that from there down, he looked like fire, and brilliant light surrounded him. Like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. And now catch this last verse here. This was the appearance of, the likeness of, the glory of the Lord. Notice how he buffers that. The appearance of, the likeness of, the glory of, and then he finally says, the person that I saw was the Lord. When I heard it, I fell face down, and I heard the voice of one speaking. And then finally, in the second chapter, this figure riding on this whatever it is that Ezekiel sees speaks to him and calls him to be a prophet. Now, let me just go back through that passage fairly quickly and just point out some things that I think are interesting for us. First of all, in verse 1, Ezekiel says he saw this, and the NIV that I just read from says, in my 30th year. But actually the text doesn't say that. It says, in the 30th year. So some commentators feel that Ezekiel is referring to his 30th year, his 30th year of life. Others feel it's referring to some other political point in Israel's history, the 30th year since this or whatever. We're not just not sure. Nevertheless, what is important here is that Ezekiel is in exile. It says, in the 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kabar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. And these visions probably were scenes that God, as it were, flashed before his eyes. So they weren't all visions of God, that is, seeing God, but they were visions that God gave him. And all the visions that he has up to the last couple of verses in the chapter are preparatory before actually seeing in some way the God of Israel. Verse 2, it was the fifth of the month. It was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim. So back when Ezekiel was exiled, King Jehoiakim was also exiled because he was a bad king. Then Babylon set up a puppet king named Zedekiah in his place, and he was a bad king. So Judah just has a run of horrible bad kings here. In verse 3, it says, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest. Now he's a priest. Think about it. He was a priest. He probably served in the temple in Jerusalem. Now he's exiled to Babylon. There is no temple there for him to work in. There are no sacrifices for him to offer. There is nothing for him to do related to what he was doing back in Israel. So that's very interesting as well. In verse 4 it says, he looked and he saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal. So he sees this windstorm. He sees this flashing lightning. He sees the brilliant light. He sees something glowing like glowing metal. And then, after seeing this windstorm, he says, I saw four living creatures in verse 5. In appearance, their form was that of a human being. Each had four faces and four wings. So probably those four faces were a way of representing God in some way, the God who sees everything. They probably were an indication of God's omnipotence, God's omniscience. He sees everything. He sees the whole world. He knows everything. They're probably advanced creatures to give us some idea about who God himself was. They had four wings. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like those of a calf and gleamed like burnished bronze. Now, this is a fascinating vision Ezekiel is having. He sees a figure like that of a man. The face on top of that figure is actually four faces. And then, as it turns out, if you go down the rest of the body of that man, when you get to the legs, he's got cow legs, calf legs, and those calf legs are shining like burnished bronze. This is a weird thing that Ezekiel is seeing. In verse 8, under their wings on their four sides, they had the hands of a man. All four of them had faces and wings. So there you go. Face like a human, wings, cow legs that are bright and shining. This is very, very strange. And then it says in verse 9, their wings touched one another. That is, there are four of them, and they're arranged so that their wings touch the wings of another one. And then, if it wasn't already so bizarre, we get to verse 10. Their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a man, and on the right side, the face of a lion. On the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. It just gets more and more bizarre. This is a very composite creature. He has a stature like a human being. He has cow legs that are bright. He has wings as if he were a bird. And he has faces of a lion, an eagle, a bull. And one of those faces is actually the face of a human being. We go to verse 11. Such were their faces. Their wings were spread out upward. Each had two wings, one touching the wing of another creature on either side, two wings covering its body. Each one went straight ahead. Now, let me ask you a question. You've got a figure. It's got four faces, one face in four different directions. When Ezekiel says, each one went straight ahead, well, what was straight? This face, or that face, or this face, or the face pointing this way? Well, that is something else to play into that plays in here. No matter which direction that figure went, it was always going straight ahead because it has four faces in each direction. Each one went straight ahead, and wherever the spirit would go, now all of a sudden Ezekiel makes reference to a spirit and says whenever that spirit would go, they would go without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire or like torches. And the fire moved back and forth among the creatures. It's almost as if we've got a vehicle here in some way. And in the middle of the vehicle, there's this fire, this lightning, this flashing taking place. Imagine a car on fire. And as that fire hits inside the car and messes with the electrical system, all kinds of things are taking place. Lightning flashing back and forth. In verse 15, as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground. So that wheel is beside each creature that has the four faces. So we've got living creatures, we've got this windstorm coming out of the north, we have these four living creatures, and we have one wheel beside each living creature. He describes what the wheels are like. They have the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like chrysolite. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. Now, we're not actually quite sure what that means. There's two possibilities, and I think scholars are pretty equally divided. One possibility is you've got a wheel on the outside, and then you've got a wheel on the inside that allows the spokes to be connected to the center. That's one possibility, but I think most commentators feel what we're looking at here is one wheel going this way, and inside of it, another wheel going the other way, a gyroscope. So whichever way that vehicle rolls, it's always rolling ahead. It's going in one of four directions. It's already laid up for it. A wheel intersecting a wheel, like a gyroscope. Verse 17, as they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not turn about as the creatures went. Their rims, verse 18, were high and awesome. All four rims were full of eyes all around. Probably that word eyes there refers to the fact that there's some kind of studs, sharp diamond studs on the wheels that allow them to have this tread as it goes along. Verse 19, when the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. When the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go. And the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When the creatures moved, verse 21, they also moved, that is, the wheels. When the creatures stood still, they also stood still. When the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. Now, let's just stop there and get a picture of what we have. We have four tall living creatures that are composite, bird, angel, calf, whatever, man, bull, lion, eagle, all in there. Beside each of those four creatures is a wheel. And then, interestingly, this whole thing that Ezekiel is seeing, these four creatures and the four wheels, can move. And they move in unison. They can go that way, this way, that way, that way. They don't have to turn. What this thing really is a kind of a chariot. But it's a very special chariot. It can go sideways, backwards, forwards. It can go up and down. And it does so not because there are any axles or nuts or bolts in this thing. The Spirit of God is in it, causing it to do what it does. And then, in verse 22, Ezekiel sees an expanse. Now, this is the very same word that is used back in Genesis chapter 1 when it says that the Lord created an expanse in the heavens, a flat plate, as it were, and this plate is on top of the four living creatures and the wheels. And that plate is being carried, as it were, by this chariot. Plate, platform, whatever you want to call it. Verse 24, when the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. If they lowered their wings, that was in deference to, in worship of, in awe of what they were carrying. And now we're going to find out what they were carrying. Verse 25. Then there came a voice from above the expanse, over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. Above the expanse, over their heads, was what looked like a throne of sapphire or lapis lazuli. And high above on the throne, there's a throne being carried here, and on that throne is the figure of a man. I saw, and I just find this fascinating, the way Ezekiel lays it out in verse 27. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he doesn't say it was his waist, it seemed like it was his waist, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire. And that from there down, I guess from there down from what looked like his waist, he looked like fire. So above the waist he looks like fire, below the waist he looks like fire, he's just fire. Brilliant light surrounded him. And then, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day, so was the radiance around him. Now, before we go any further, let me just say this. When this word rainbow appears in this verse, it's very, very possible that we should not envision simply a pretty, you know, Care Bear thing up in the sky with their nice colors. The word here for rainbow is the exact same word that is used in the Hebrew Bible to refer to a battle bow. So, is it a rainbow? Well, I think so. But it also serves double duty as a battle bow. We'll see more about that in just a few minutes. So Ezekiel says, when I saw it, I fell face down and I heard the voice of one speaking. All right, now, what Ezekiel saw, he did not see in a vacuum. So, now we can start looking at some slides. Next slide. Look at this here. This is a statue that we have that comes to us from northern Syria. It comes around, it's dated somewhere between 1000 and 500 BC. We're not sure the exact date of it, but what you have here is that very top figure you see on the screen, that is a deity of some kind. Then, beneath him are three creatures. Right in the middle, you see a man, and maybe you can't tell it, but he's got a bird's head. And he's holding on to two lions. So that man who has that bird's head and those two lions are holding up a platform, and on the platform is some ancient Near Eastern god. Very similar, in some ways, to what Ezekiel saw. And then, notice this next slide. Here is another god who is being carried, and notice what's carrying them. There are two figures on, there's a figure in the middle in a kind of a circle there, but beside that figure in the middle, there are two other figures, and notice how they look. They've got just one head, just one face, but that face is a weird looking face. And then they each have four wings, and then as you go down, notice what happens to their legs. What kind of legs do they have? Calf legs, cow legs. So here is a picture of a deity, and this comes to us from the Persian period. So this is actually this is probably 100 or 200 years after Ezekiel, but probably reflecting other statues that would have come before. So very interesting there how this compares to what Ezekiel saw in his vision. Then the next slide, this comes to us from the 18th century BC. This is a good 1,200 years before Ezekiel. It comes from Assyria. And notice we've got a figure there. It's a figure like that of a man. And he's got four faces. And he's being carried by some kind of creature on the bottom. I'm not actually quite sure what that creature is. But a four-faced deity, a four-faced god, is being carried around by an animal in this picture. This next one is quite elaborate. What you have here, if you look at the very bottom of the picture, those are bulls. And they are holding up a row of other creatures. And those creatures are holding up other creatures. Several of those creatures are composite. They'll look kind of human, but they'll have different kinds of faces. Sometimes a lion face, sometimes an ox face. And you go up all the way, and then at the very top of that slide, what you'll see there is the sky. These are holding up the sky. And though it's not in the picture, implied here is that on top of the sky that they're holding up, that's where the Assyrian god is being held up, whom they are worshiping. It's not actually pictured in this particular display, though. Two more pictures to look at. Look at this one, the next one. This comes to us from the 8th century, comes to us from Assyria, one of Israel's neighboring countries to the northeast. And that is a god in that picture. His name is Hadad. He is riding on a bull. And in his hands, do you know what he has in his hands? He's got lightning bolts. And he's going to throw those lightning bolts down at someone. This is Hadad. He's a god of war. He's getting ready to engage in some kind of battle. And so he's got these lightning bolts in his hand, ready to fire them down on the earth. That's what's happening there. The last slide I have for you to look at here, in terms of these pictures, this comes to us from the 9th century. It comes to us from Assyria. And what we have right in the middle of this whole thing is the god Asher. Now, notice what he is doing here. He is holding a bow, and he's got the arrow drawn, ready to shoot somebody, okay, some enemy of his. But maybe you can't see it real well, but if you trace that bow in his hands and go around, you see that it turns into several layers. It turns into a rainbow. The rainbow he's holding that is in the background of him turns into a bow in his hands. So this is the rainbow surrounding a god who is about to go into battle and go into war. Okay, I thought you might find that interesting. Now, as we move toward the end of the message here, I want us to reflect on this vision that Ezekiel is being given. Remember, he's in exile. He is among the Israelites who are in exile. And he formerly was a priest who could go into the temple and in some measure communicate with God. Now he's in a foreign country where that God doesn't dwell anymore. But that God appears to him in this foreign country and gives him a revelation of himself. Now, if you have had a hard time understanding this passage, especially trying to follow by my very poor explanation of it, then the desired effect has been achieved. If you've had a hard time understanding it, you are not by yourself. I have read dozens of commentaries on Ezekiel, and they are just about as clueless as we are right here. They have a hard time understanding it. But one commentator in particular notes that and says this, Peter Craigie. He says, if we fail to understand some of Ezekiel's vision, then paradoxically, we have understood it in part. For its essence is that God is ultimately beyond our comprehension. In a way, the vision balances the second commandment. We are not to make images of God. And there is no simpler way of making an image than constructing a set of theological propositions. Now, what he's trying to say here is, you know, we have to do our theology. We have to write our theologies and say what we believe about God and think about God, but they always fall woefully short of who God actually is. And then John Taylor says this, the false prophet can chatter glibly about God because he has never met him. The man of God comes out from his presence indelibly marked with the glory of his Lord. So Ezekiel is a prophet, and he can only be a true prophet if he's had a vision of God, if he knows who God is. Now, the next thing we have to see here is what is happening in this whole description. On the one hand, all of that vision, the creatures, the wheels, the windstorm, all of that was to prepare us for a vision of God at the very end. But it also has another message as well. That is a chariot, a war chariot. And God is going to go to war. That's what's being said here. Now, Ezekiel said he saw a windstorm coming out of the north. One of his fellow prophets, Jeremiah, back in the land of Babylon, also had a vision. And I want you to read what he said. Jeremiah, when he was called to be a prophet, he too had a vision, and this is what happened. The word of the Lord came to me again when God called him. What do you see? That is, God is giving him a vision. And Jeremiah said, I see a pot that is boiling, I answered. It is tilting toward us from the north. The Lord said to me, from the north, disaster will be poured out on all who live in the land. I am about to summon all the peoples of the northern kingdoms, declares the Lord. Their kings will come and set up their thrones in the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem. They will come against all her surrounding walls and against all the towns of Judah. I will pronounce my judgments on all my people because of their wickedness in forsaking me, in burning incense to other gods, and in worshiping what their hands have made. When Ezekiel sees this vision, he's seeing the very same thing that his fellow prophet Jeremiah is seeing back in Judah. God gave Jeremiah a prophecy. I am going to destroy Judah. I'll restore her again at some point, but for now, because of her sins and rebellion, I'm going to destroy her. So Ezekiel is in Babylon. He's with the exiles. He's a prophet. There are other prophets who were exiled there. And they told the people, this is only going to last for a very short time. How much Ezekiel would have liked to have been able to deliver the same message. Just a short time, and we're going back. But just like Jeremiah, who told the people of Judah, this is going to last for 70 years, Ezekiel has to tell the exiles, you are never going back to Judah. and the family you left behind, your mothers, your fathers, your brothers, your sisters, and if you have any children there, your sons and daughters, you will not see them again, because Nebuchadnezzar is going to come along and he's going to destroy our homeland. That was not the message he wanted to deliver. But God gave him the vision. He had the vision of God, as it were, riding on a chariot, surrounded by a rainbow or a bow, making war against his own people because of their rebellion against him. Now, I want you to think a little bit here about our situation today. We are Christians. We are believers. We are those who are waiting for the coming of Jesus Christ. We believe that someday God will come, and that he will come to correct all wrongs, to right all injustices, and to bring peace to this world that has been looking for peace for so long. But we also believe that the way he will do that is by carrying out war against this world first. And all the kingdoms of the world who have turned their back on God and refuse to follow him and instead worship the idols of the age, God will also make war against them. And part of our message as Christians who are living in exile and who are being marginalized and ostracized by the world around us, having more and more of our freedoms and rights taken away, ridiculed by those who make fun of our beliefs and our social positions and our ethics and our morals, part of our task is to be faithful in an exilic situation. And the only way we can do that is to know for sure who God is. And that's what happens with Ezekiel here. In case Ezekiel was at all inclined to forget, God gave him a beautiful, spacious, capacious vision that showed him who God is. Well, I don't expect God to come to us and give us a dream like this or a vision. But what God has given us is his word. He's given us the right to come before him in prayer and bring our needs and our petitions before him. Avail yourselves of these means: scripture, prayer, fellowship with other believers, so that you can carry the message of the gospel to a world that needs it so bad. A world that's going to hell in a handbasket, is what my friend said, but doesn't have to if they believe in the God whom we serve, like Ezekiel's God. Let's pray.